Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper. Tonight, our topic, is there such a thing as adult onset ADHD? And with us in our virtual studio is the Dr. Thomas Brown, spectacular guest, exceptionally articulate, and so we're really, really excited. Real quickly, tonight is Wednesday, December the 6th in the year 2017 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our show tonight is being brought to you by children and adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, better known as CHAD. They are the largest not-for-profit organization that advocates on behalf of those with ADHD. We're exceptionally thrilled and proud to have them support our show. So we've got a little tip that we'd like to run from CHAD, and then we'll get into the meat of the show. So here we go.
Children with ADHD can be prone to overstimulation. The holidays can be especially stressful. Know your child's limits and select holiday activities wisely. Make sure there is a quiet space where your child can go and regroup. Choose calmness over chaos. For more tips on making the holidays work for you, visit the CHAD website at www.help4adhd.org. That's www.help4adhd.org.
Thanks again, CHAD, for that tip. If you're part of the ADHD community, I encourage you to become a member of CHAD. There's all kinds of great resources. It's spectacular. But the real reason to belong to CHAD is to support them because they advocate on behalf of those with ADHD. They speak on Capitol Hill. They deal with regulatory agencies. They deal with the media. If it wasn't for them, there's lots of hard-fought accommodations that we wouldn't necessarily have. So they're a real resource. So please learn more about them by going to chadd.org. And I encourage you, if you're not already a member, sign up to become a member. Okay, so let's get into tonight's show. Is there such thing as adult onset ADHD? And I have to tell you that over the years, this is one of those topics that was kind of out there. And I was like, I don't know. And then I heard Dr. Thomas Brown talking about it. And he's a guy who knows his stuff. And he's exceptionally articulate. And so I reached out to him to do this interview. And I have to tell you, I was really blown away. It was fascinating to me kind of what's going on. And we're really happy to bring this to you because I think you're going to learn some things that or see things a little bit kind of differently. That's going to explain a lot out there. And for many adults out there who think they have ADHD or did it and got diagnosed later, it's going to make a lot of sense to you. So this show was pre-recorded. We're going to run it in its entirety. I hope you really enjoy it. I learned a lot from it. Dr. Brown is absolutely incredible, one of my favorite guests. So without any further ado, let's roll the tape.
We're here today with Dr. Brown, who is a clinical psychologist who received his PhD from Yale University and is the director of the Brown Clinic for Attention and Related Disorders in Manhattan Beach, California. He specializes in assessment and the treatment of high IQ children, adolescents, and adults with ADHD and related problems. And as a notation to that, we did an interview with him, I think about 2 years ago, on that very topic, and it was a very insightful, very spectacular interview. So I encourage you to Google Attention Talk Radio and Dr. Thomas Brown on that topic. After serving on the clinical faculty of Yale Medical School for 20 years, Dr. Brown resigned to accept an appointment as an adjunct clinical associate professor of psychiatry and behavioral science at the Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California. Big fan of those people out there. We've interviewed a couple of them before. Dr. Brown has a couple books out. His most recent are Smart But Stuck, Emotions in Children and Adults with ADHD, and Outside the Box, Rethinking It. ADHD in Children and Adults, A Practical Guide. You can learn a ton about him at his website at brownadhdclinic.com. And I have to tell you something. We've interviewed a lot of people on Attention Talk Radio, and one of the things that I love about Dr. Brown, he is so articulate, and he has got such a great way of putting things into a context. One of the things he used one time, it's like watching a basketball game through a telescope is like a narrowing a kind of attention. I can't tell you how much I love to quote him on that. So with all that, I bring up welcome to the show, Dr. Brown.
Jeff, thanks very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be back on your show.
Well, it's like I said, it's an honor to have you on here because you're so good at taking things and simplifying and explaining it to them in layman. So tonight our topic is there such a thing as adult onset ADHD? And I think that there's a lot of interesting things that are out there. Can you tell us, I mean, your interest in this area, and begin to tell us about that kind of in general. We'll go from there.
I'd be glad to. It's an interesting cutting edge of research right now. You know, when ADHD was first described back in the early 1900s, what we now call ADHD, it was all about little boys who couldn't sit still and wouldn't shut up and were just driving everybody nuts. And the idea was that it would be something you'd notice in kids when they're 3, 4, 5 years old, and then they'd outgrow it by the time they got into early teenage years, at least most of them. And then they did some longer-term studies and found that that was true for only 3 out of 10, that most of the people who had it when they're kids, in fact, continued to have difficulties with it until at least their late teens, early adult years, and sometimes way beyond that. But since then, we've learned that there are some folks, for example, the research that was done by my group when I was working at Yale with high IQ folks showed us that there were a lot of people with ADHD who'd never had any real symptoms of it that was very noticeable until they got into like middle school or junior high. Because many of them were honor students in elementary school where they had just one teacher to deal with all day who would help them all stay organized. And it wasn't then until they got up to the point where they had to deal with multiple teachers and had to take more responsibility for their own work that they began to have difficulties. And so we began to see that even though the diagnostic manual said at that time you had to have at least some of the symptoms by age 7, they recently changed it to 12, we now know that there are a lot of folks who you just don't see the problems until they meet the challenges that you encounter in adolescence and sometimes even in adulthood.
That's fascinating. You did this research on people with high IQ. I'm just kind of curious because the first thing that comes to me is their IQ, what kind of gets them through it, and so it's not really a late onset. It just starts to manifest when that happens. Or is it something that progresses in terms of develop later? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, actually, there are a couple of ways of responding to that question. First, let me give you another example from another field of medicine. If you put somebody on a table and have them lie quietly while you do an electrocardiogram, you may get a perfectly clean EKG on them, even though with some of those same people, if you put them on a treadmill and increase the resistance, you can find occlusion of arteries that could be problematic that you would not even be able to pick up as long as they were lying still. So in that case, it's until you stress the system, you don't really have a chance to see what some of the problems of the system are. And I think that's true for a lot of very bright people who manage to get through early years of school without much difficulty because it's so easy for them. But then when they have to manage it more on their own and it gets more complicated, the readings are longer, the sentences are more complex, the details they have to work with are more complicated, and the writing involves a different level of organization, then you begin to see the problems that go with ADHD, the problems with working memory, the problems with organization, the problems with getting started and managing your own stuff. And so that's why I think, there's another thing to factor into this, and that is there are some parents who are so good at providing scaffolding around their kids who have ADHD during the years the kids are living at home that you don't see the problem. And I see a number of people who have been honor students when they were living at home and they were in high school, say, and then they get to college when all of a sudden they don't have their parents around anymore to help them organize and push them, and they crash and burn. There are more challenges that you face.
Yeah, everybody, we're recording this on December 1st to be aired another day. And Dr. Brown, I have to tell you, It actually started yesterday because being in Tampa, there's the University of Tampa down here, the University of South Florida, Eckerd College, and I guess some others. And it's funny because this is the time, and yesterday started, it was the season where I started getting the phone calls from the parents who kids, you know, they were honor roll student, the Eagle Scout in high school, and now they're panicked because the grades have come in or they're about ready to come in, and they're freaking out because the students are about ready to get put on academic probation. And it's interesting to me because one of the commonalities I when I start asking those questions is usually mom and dad have been so involved and they were high achievers, but that scaffolding is no longer there and it starts to be a little bit of a problem. So it's
exactly.
It's very timely. I had to share that.
Yeah, and I think this is the time of year when you begin to see it for those, particularly for the freshmen when they're first encountering the demands of college. There's
so
some other folks
guess,
where you don't. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought, please.
I was just going to say there's some other folks where you don't even see it in college because they can work pretty well within the structure of teachers and assignments and due dates and stuff like that. But then when they get out of college, they've got to look for a job. And they've got to organize their own time, and they've got to prioritize their tasks, often much more difficult time. And the world of, you know, running your own, you know, work, your job search and adapting to the demands of a work setting where you've got a bunch of other people to relate to and bosses that you think of as maybe not being as good at figuring out things as you are. And then particularly when you get into, like, you've got a relationship where you get a partner, and then if you're having kids, those demands pile on top of each other. And, you know, sometimes for folks with ADHD, you don't see the problem until they get hit with some of these adult responsibilities.
Wow. I tell you what, let's go to break. When we come back, this is interesting to me. What you're describing is really making a lot of sense to me. But what's interesting is that because of the diagnostic criteria often dictates that these symptoms show up a little bit earlier. I want to come, when we come back to talk a little bit about the challenges of somebody who's run into this that goes out and is trying to find out what's going on. Before we go to break, can you just tell us a little bit about your books? And everybody, you can learn about Dr. Brown's book at his website. That's drthomasebrown.com. And you can also look up, just, you know, search his name and ADHD on Amazon for the books. But can you just tell us about the two books that are out, I mean, the most recent ones?
Yeah, let me just mention the website. You were given the old website address. My new one is brownadhdclinic.com. There's a lot of info there. But the books, the two books that I've done most recently, one of them is called Smart But Stuck, Emotions in Teens and Adults with ADHD, and it's just saying that, hey, emotions play a huge role in ADHD, and it doesn't have it in the book, but it really is there, and I've got about 11 case studies of people that I've had a chance to get to know pretty well and try and describe how their emotional conflicts and difficulties intertwined with their ADHD. And then the more recent book is Outside the Box, Rethinking ADD-ADHD, where I'm trying to address the fact that the DSM-5 criteria have not caught up with the science about ADHD, and to try and explain a little bit about what we know in science that has not yet worked into the diagnostic criteria in the manual, and then a lot of practical information about how ADHD differs at different ages, and about ins and outs of details of medication and non-medication treatments and so forth.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to kind of touch base a little bit on that on the DSM stuff here in a little bit. So let's go to a break real quick. Again, his website is brownadhdclinic.com. With that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by digcoaching.com. If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We are having a conversation with the articulate Dr. Brown, one of our favorites to take things that are really kind of complicated sometimes and boil down in really simple terms. Before the break, we were really kind of talking about ADHD and, stresses, and as you know, sometimes the things can show up a little bit later in life than what the diagnostic manuals read. And before the break, we're actually talking about some of his books about the notion of how the diagnosed criteria really hasn't kind of caught up with common stuff. And I think, Dr. Brown, this is the epicenter we kind of want to talk about a little bit, because if you've got these people that are doing very, very well and they get stressed a little bit later, but the manuals are not saying that they have it because they didn't show up later in life, that sounds like it could be very trying and very much a dilemma for people in this area. You want to speak to that?
Yeah, it's a problem if you're dealing with a doctor who tends to deal with every word of the diagnostic manual as though it was handed down by God on Mount Sinai. The fact is that these are guidelines for assessment and treatment that are put together by committees. And if you read the manual carefully, they've got some cautions there about the need to be able to be somewhat flexible interpreting it when you go to do clinical work. But the fact is some people are too much by the book and feel like if it doesn't fit with all the details of what's in the book, it can't be recognized as ADHD, and I think that's poor clinical judgment.
And then I got to believe that that's still a little bit trying, because if you are performing and you run into these things and you're going and you don't have that diagnosis, I got to believe it's showing up as something else that it's not there, and really
often people get picked up as having depression or anxiety when they have some of those difficulties. But then you've got some clinicians who still say, well, I need to talk with your parents, both of whom may be dead, to find out, did you have the symptoms before you were age 7 or before age 12? And the fact is that we now have a lot of research. There are 3 major studies that have been published over the last few years where they did studies of groups of kids, some of whom had ADHD carefully diagnosed when they were kids, and some of whom were carefully evaluated and were found not to have ADHD. There was one of those studies done in New Zealand, another one in Brazil, and another one in England and Wales. And what they found in each one of those 3 studies was that there were some of the kids that were young kids when they were evaluated initially and found to have ADHD who didn't have it by the time they were 18 or 11 or 38, depending on which study you're looking at. And that there were some people who were found when they were kids not to have ADHD, but when they looked at them again years later, sometimes just 7 years later, like at age 18, they did have it. And there are 2 ways you could think about that. One of them is what I was talking about a few minutes ago, and that is that sometimes you can't see the problem until the person has stress on functions that are impaired in ADHD. And I'm not talking about stress as in just worry. I'm talking about they can't cope with some of the demands of managing themselves and doing the jobs. Their working memory doesn't work that well for being able to keep track of many things at one time, or they've got a lot of trouble getting started or getting organized. And for those people who begin to deal with, for example, the requirements when you get into high school, when you get into college, you begin to see the ADHD symptoms in some people who didn't show them when they were younger.
Yep.
And that's particularly true for those who are pretty smart. But there's another possibility, too. It was shown in a study that was done in Sweden where they were looking at twin pairs. And they had almost 1,500 pairs of twins. And they looked at them at three different points, ages around 8 or 9, ages 13, 14, ages 16, 17, and actually a fourth group at ages 19, 20. And what they found was that there were some of those that when they looked at them in the younger ages clearly had ADHD, and then it faded as they got older. And as they looked at the sample in the older age range, some of them clearly had the ADHD syndrome in ways that was worth diagnosing. And what they came up with when they looked at the genetic data is there are, you know, genes do not all turn on at the same time. Both good genes and bad genes, there's some genes that we carry that are operative when we're born, you know, eye color, hair color, and so forth. But there's some that don't develop until much later. And there's evidence from the Swedish study that suggests that for some people, attention problems emerge genetically, you know, in adolescence or in early adulthood, even though they were not seen in the genetic data earlier.
So genes don't actually turn, I mean, they don't necessarily turn on at one time. Some of them can, like, kind of, I don't know what the right adjective is, but there's a delay and or adjustment.
Yeah, they turn on and they turn off.
It.
Yeah, the genetic, you know, everybody thinks about it, a lot of people think about genes as though it's just the blueprint, and then the blueprint is all worked out during pregnancy, and then everything just develops. But the fact is there are many good things and some more problematic things that sometimes do not develop until later.
Wow.
And ADD seems to be one of them for some people.
So I mean, I'm just kind of curious. I want to kind of just drop this into the mix a little bit. I don't know how it necessarily fits, but I understood, and everybody, he's the Dr. Brown's a smart guy. Mine is just like what I've heard. So Dr. Brown, a lot of times women that are going through menopause at that point in time, there's some hormonal changes, and a lot of times they might be really high-functioning person with ADHD, and when they go through that change of life, the ADHD begins to manifest or they have more difficulty with estrogen. Is there something to that, or is that just a myth?
Absolutely. A study group I worked with at Yale, another study group I was working with at Yale, and then we moved the research to University of Pennsylvania Medical School. We've published three papers on that topic. And basically, the way I got into it was I was seeing a lot of kids who would be coming in with their mothers, and we'll talk about, you know, going through this symptom checklist for the kid. And the mothers would be saying, and I'm talking now about well-educated women who are business and professional women who are doing quite well, typically in their, you know, mid to late 40s, early 50s, and would be saying, you know, I never had any troubles like this when I was a kid or when I was in school, even when I was in college, but, you know, over the last few years, I've been having more and more trouble. My memory's shot to hell. I can't remember stuff I used to remember easily. I have a lot of trouble with being able to pull out of my head information that I could usually pull out of the files of my mind easily. And I have difficulty with organization and getting struggle, unlike anything I've had before. And I began to wonder a little bit about this, and then I started remembering something that I'd learned about years earlier, and that is that estrogen is one of the primary modulators for the release of dopamine in the female brain. And during menopause, it's defined by the dropping off of estrogen availability in the female brain. And it's not at all surprising that at least for some, not for all women, but for some women, When that estrogen level drops down, you begin to see the onset of many of the symptoms of ADHD. It may not be the whole syndrome, not everything on the symptom list necessarily, but certainly issues around working memory. That's short-term working memory. You've got to hold things in mind. And, of course, the working memory is also the search engine for the brain, for pulling stuff out when you need it. And many of these women were saying, you know, it's really very scary to me because I'm wondering whether I've just had ADHD all along and it just didn't show up until now, or whether I've got early onset Alzheimer's. And it's frankly frightening me. And so we organized a study, and we've produced three different papers on our research, because what we wanted to do was to see if these symptoms of ADHD, even though it might not be the full syndrome, that were onsetting in midlife, 45 to 55 years old for many of these women, would respond to treatment with the medicines that we use for ADHD, because estrogen replacement therapy doesn't seem to touch this, and there are reasons why a lot of women don't want to do it because of cancer fears. And what we found, we got pretty good results. We tried it initially with the first pilot study was with Strattera, and then when we got a signal that that was somewhat helpful for women with this kind of a picture, we did another study with Vyvanse and found that we got pretty good results with a number of these women who had no previous history of ADHD symptoms in childhood or early adulthood, but did report a midlife onset of a syndrome that looks very much like ADHD and which, for many, responds to treatment with the medicines that we use for ADHD.
Wow, that's fascinating. I want to go to a break again here real quick. But before we do, if I read an article that Dr. Brown wrote a couple years ago. I don't even remember the top of it, but you were talking about dopamine and how it's like spraying, like hairspray, neurotransmitters into the synaptic gap. It was another great example how you articulated something I used. And I'm bringing this up because if you'd like to learn a little bit more about dopamine and ADHD, we did a great interview with Dr. Kenneth Bloom on dopamine and dopamine and working memory. So if you're listening to the show and you find that interesting, I encourage you to go look that up. Dr. Brown, when we come back, I want to just kind of just talk about a little bit about emotion in ADHD, and I'm kind of curious how that maybe plays into, or maybe it doesn't, into onset a little bit later. So we'll cover that when we get back. Everybody, again, to learn more about Dr. Brown, you need to go to his website at brownadhdclinic.com. With that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk Radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. Again, we're here with Dr. Brown having a spectacular interview. He's very articulate and always very, very insightful. I always learn a ton when I listen to him. And just another Dr. Brownism that I always love is Years ago, I heard him talking about working memory, just memory in general, and called like emotions and memory, like working memory, like Google for the brain, because we elicit things up from emotion. And so, Dr. Brown, kind of teeing that stuff up, I'm hearing much more that the emotions is much a part of ADHD or plays into that. Can you just speak to that a little bit, and what's its role, if any, with adult onset?
Emotions are a critical element of the way the brain assigns priorities. The things which really make us interested and say, that's something I like, that's something I want to get into. Or the things where you say, oh my God, I do not want to get into that, that's going to lead to something that's going to be embarrassing, or it's going to be something that's just going to hurt me, and I don't want to do it. If you get a situation like that where you're really drawn to something, or where you're really turned off by something and want to back off from it or totally ignore it, those two kinds of experiences, as we perceive them, it's not always done on the most rational basis, for God's sake. But the fact is, those intense emotions of attraction or wanting to back off of something change the chemistry of the brain instantly. And the problem is, it's not under voluntary control. And that's why it is that every person I've ever seen who has ADHD has a few things they can do where they have no trouble at all paying attention, focusing, and utilizing their executive functions quite well. It might be playing a sport. It might be repairing a car. It might be making music or making art. But for those specific activities that really turn the person on, or the things that really turn the person off and make them feel like, oh my God, if I don't take care of this right now, then something very unpleasant is going to be happening. Those two things change the chemistry of the brain, and they release an increase of dopamine across the connections between the neurons that run the operating system, the management system, the executive functions of the brain.
Yep.
However, routine stuff that's not all that interesting, for people with ADHD, it's very hard for them to be able to mobilize themselves in order to be able to do those things that are not appealing to them, even though they know damn well that it's something that ought to be. And the example that I often use for talking about that is one that I got from one of my patients years ago, and he said, you know, having ADD is like having erectile dysfunction of the mind. If the task you're trying to do is something that turns you on, you're up for it and you can perform. But if the task you're trying to do is not something that's intrinsically interesting, if it doesn't turn you on, you can't get it up. And if you can't get it up, you're not going to be able to perform. And in that situation, it does not matter how much you may say to yourself, I need to, I really ought to, I should. You can't make it happen because it's simply not a willpower kind of thing. And ADHD very often looks like it's a big problem with willpower. Well, if you can do it here, why can't you focus there? When in fact, it's not. It's a problem with the dynamics of the chemistry of the brain. And emotions are the way the brain makes priority judgments.
So one of the things that's been fascinating me over the years, Dr. Brown, coaching those with ADHD, some of them have an insatiable appetite for learning. They're not so good at the execution part of it, but they love to learn. I'm envisioning somebody that's got ADHD, and it's interesting because actually I'm digressing. There was a psychiatrist that I coached one time that had ADHD, and it was funny in the context of dopamine. We came to realize he's a scientific journal junkie, because he would get into those things, you know, at 8 o'clock at night, be there at 5 o'clock in the morning because he couldn't put them down because he kind of lit them up a little bit. But that notion of that their insatiable appetite for learning, and they're cruising along and they're performing well, but maybe later in life they're casting a job and the learning isn't there anymore, and they're not getting that dopamine burst, and life is becoming more boring, and then the symptoms start to kind of come out a little bit more. Would that be a possible example of how it could come out later, or am I guess comment on that? Does that follow?
Well, I think that the issue you're talking about is, you know, why is it that people sometimes burn out in their interest and engagement in something? And sometimes it's just that the circumstances change, and whatever it was that really turned you on to something doesn't carry that same value for you at that particular time. Motivation is something which changes. It's very idiosyncratic. It's very different for other people. We talk about it sometimes as though, you know, he's very motivated or he's very unmotivated, when in fact it's not like how much gas do you have in the tank. It's a matter of how much does that particular situation you're in seem to you as an individual, seem to you at this moment to be something that really turns you on, something that really interests you, something that draws your interest or not. And there are a lot of things that can change that. It depends on who you're with, what the context is, what the circumstances are, you know, and it can make a big difference.
As you're talking about this and as we're coming to start kind of pulling this kind of together, there's a lot that we've really kind of covered that's fascinating to me that really makes a lot of sense. And I'm trying to imagine what it's like to be somebody who saw the title of the show and is listening to the show and maybe because they're identifying with it and maybe they're starting to see the symptoms kind of later in life and they may be gone to see a mental health professional. They didn't get the diagnosis. Dr. Brown, where can they maybe go find some of these studies and stuff to educate their provider? Because a lot of the people that are out there clinically working, they, you know, the doctors are running businesses, and they're not always kind of current. Any advice to that crowd on how they can maybe educate their doctors on some of this stuff to maybe get proper diagnosis?
Well, I think that people need to educate themselves first to get some idea. But I think it's important to remember the context of the professional, and that is, I've taught the courses at the American Psychiatric Association's annual meeting for the last 15 years about ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk with those doctors about what they've learned over the course of medical school, I'll often ask them, how much time during the years of med school and your residency training was spent in helping you to understand about ADHD, particularly in adults? And the answer ranges usually from an average of 0 to 20 minutes over the course of all those years.
Wow.
Most medical professionals are not given anywhere near adequate training to recognize and understand and treat ADHD, particularly in adolescents and adults. It's just not in the curriculum. Or if it is, it's presented in such a hasty and superficial way. They learn far more about other disorders, which are far less frequent in the general population.
Wow.
And so as a result, I think, and the other thing to keep in mind is that most docs, particularly primary care docs, they've got to keep up to date on a whole lot of things with a whole lot of different body systems and a whole lot of changes in treatments and medications. And so it's not surprising they can't always pick it up. What can a person do if they're dealing with a doc who doesn't seem to understand very much about ADHD as an adult? And that is, get yourself well informed about it and then carefully select a few articles that you can take to them and ask them if they'd be willing to take some time to look at it. And do it with some respect for the fact that they've already got a lot of stuff they do learn and they're trying to keep up with, but give it a try. And if they're not willing to try, get another doctor. You may have to ask around a little bit. You can try with talking with other people who have ADHD. You can check out the lists that you get with Chad or Attitude Magazine or some of the other folks around you. If you've got a relationship with a coach, often they can tell you what doctors they've heard about that have been particularly helpful. But the fact is, a lot of medical professionals, I'm talking about psychiatrists, psychologists, primary care docs, APRNs, that they just haven't had that much training about this.
Yep.
And as a result, often they're operating on old outmoded notions or is excessively rigid adherence to diagnostic criteria that really don't match up very well with what we now know in the science.
Absolutely. As we wrap this up, any last thoughts on adult onset ADHD? Have we covered it all?
Well, we certainly haven't covered it all, but I think the main point is that even though the diagnostic manual says you have to have had at least some symptoms of ADHD before age 12, that's the current manual, DSM-5, most doctors who really understand how the system works can recognize that that's not always the case. And the research literature is now getting more and more clear about the fact that sometimes it's not until you encounter challenges that are pushing harder on the weaknesses that people with ADD have in terms of working memory, in terms of organization, in terms of prioritizing things, in terms of modulating emotional reactions, and that some of those stressors that just emerge in the course of more advanced education, in terms of trying to carry on a job, and in terms of managing relationships and parenting, that sometimes you can then see difficulties that were not so easy to see before. And they might respond well to treatment with the ADHD medications we've got available.
Wow. Well, so Dr. Brown, this has been very enlightening. I've got, as always, a bunch of nuggets that I'm going to try to take and kind of spend some time with and kind of grow with. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the show. It's been spectacular.
Jeff, it's been a pleasure. I thank you very much, and I'd like to commend you for the work that you've done to bring information about ADHD to a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have
It's it's been a blessing, but it's funny because it was selfish reasons. I did this because I'm not a very good writer, and it's funny the education that I've gotten over the years interviewing all the thought leaders like yourself, Dr. Bloom, and dozens of others. It's been fascinating. So I appreciate you guys coming on your time and helping me to educate the population. So thank you, Dr. Brown.
Thank you.
Everyone, we hope you've enjoyed this edition of Attention Talk Radio. Again, Dr. Brown's website is brownadhdclinic.com. With that, we hope you've enjoyed it. Catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.